Marini's Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, Play Ya Ya Ding Dong, Eurovision. Not in Glasgow. Lennon gives players the heave-ho if they want to go. Who needs Messi when you've got McKenzie? And Scotland get set for Israel. I'm Andrew Slaven, and this week, joining me once again, the beautiful, the wonderful, the horny JJ Bull.
How'd you know that?
I just went for horny because Bull, you know, yeah. There you go. Do you know what I'm horny for? I'm horny for some European action.
I think this is a terrible way to start a podcast for anyone.
Everyone's now raising their eyebrows.
And let's make sure that's all they're raising. What's going
on. Hey! Yeah.
So
we had the Europa League draw on Monday. Some interesting ties for our Scottish teams, but they're all away.
That's correct, yep. Rangers got drawn against, what do they call them, Lincoln Red Imps?
Lincoln Red Imps, yep.
From Gibraltar.
They're going to the Rock again, been there before.
I think didn't they play Celtic a while ago?
They played, Lincoln Red Imps beat Celtic. It was Brendan Rodgers' first competitive game as Celtic manager. And I think the goal scorer was a policeman. I'm not joking.
I was there. So many jokes to line up for that.
I was there, ducking in that game. That was an interesting day.
Motherwell got Coleraine in Northern Ireland, I do believe. And Aberdeen got drawn against Viking.
Which is a great name.
Yeah. And they all wear Viking helmets on the pitch, which is controversial, but helps them with headers. And
also horny.
I think they are currently, I'll just tell you, I think they're like 10th in the Norwegian league at the moment. Yeah, they are currently 10th because they're already 16 games into their season. I mean, I should have found out if they had a pause or not. I can't remember. They did.
Well, I'm looking at this as, albeit their away fixtures, this is still a good, these are still good ties for Motherwell, Aberdeen and Rangers.
Oh yeah, it's certainly better. Like Shamrock Rovers got drawn at home to AC Milan.
Oh man, that's it. Do you know what? How it's such a shame though, there's not going to be any fans there.
Well, this is it. Like those games are only good because they're definitely losing that. They're only good when your fans can go and talk about it for years and years after. But yeah, there we go.
Well, fingers crossed we get through all of those ones. But coming up this week, we'll be deep diving into Celtic and the recurring Euro nightmare. Laura Brannan's back as well to dissect Steve Clarke's very good Scotland squad because he's a very good manager.
He's a very good manager, yeah.
So let's head first to Celtic Park.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
McGregor coming forward, bursting through, and he's found James Forrest in a bit of room. Forrest, can he get the shot away? Back comes Labby. Forrest finds the goal, though. That is an absolute beauty of a finish from James Forrest.
Celtic fired three past Motherwell in the week that they exited Europe, but gained David Turnbull from the Lanarkshire side. Goals from Forrest, Ayeti and Julian sealed the 3 points for Celtic, and it's a result that leaves Motherwell the only winless side in the Premiership. We'll talk Celtic in a moment with Kieran Devlin from The Athletic, so just a quick word on Motherwell, JJ. No wins yet, but you know, it's a bit of a free pass against Celtic, but it's not a good start for Motherwell. No wins, 6 games, that's worrying. They few games to go, and you'd probably think, how do you get out of this mess?
Yeah, it's not ideal, obviously. I don't think it's disastrous. They're not going to get relegated or anything like that. But, I mean, I think the last season, like I said this before, I think Aberdeen probably pipped them to third because they were kind of losing a bit of form. And because they were playing really nice football, like possession-based, if you don't cut through lines quickly enough when you're playing, I think you get, like, it just slows things down too much and other teams can counterattack you and you have to open up more to be able to play that way, which makes you more vulnerable. And all teams in Scotland sit deep and then they launch it and get off a second ball. But like you see, the way they defended against Celtic, so they switched to, had a back three, which is obviously, so you've got a five and you're defending. Mm. But everyone was so passive. Like the first goal, is it McGregor that makes a run?
Straight through the
man,
left
there's like
of midfield.
Two players who should have like brought him down or just like pulled the shirt to something to stop it. You've got to be more aggressive, way more aggressive. Like in that Josie documentary, sort of Spurs documentary that's just come out, there's a, he talks about how you need to be bastards for 90 minutes. It, like, he's dead right, that's how you win games. And for all those goals that Celtic scored, there's clear little bits where a player could have done an extra bit. They could have pushed themselves a little bit more. Maybe they're not quite as fit as need to be because of what's all going on in that. But I think you, I mean, if I were Stephen Robinson, you'd be roaring. If it's Football Manager, you're going aggressive. I can't believe you've done that. I can't remember the phrases in the game, but you know the one. Just go hard. Yeah. And you can't, especially against Celtic, right? You've got to be absolutely smashing to them.
I couldn't agree more with just be Motherwell being a bit too passive. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's turn to Celtic and welcome to the show Scotland and Celtic writer for The Athletic, Kieran Devlin. Hi, Kieran. Look, it's a mixed week for Celtic. How have you rated their start to the season so far?
I guess it's been mixed, to say the least. I feel that, you know, Lennon was very candid when he said that they didn't have one of their objectives when they locked out the Champions League in the second round. It's the, you know, the earliest they've been knocked out in the second round since 2005-06, when the infamous Bratislava fixture, when Gordon Strachan's first season. And it's fairly catastrophic when you're both in terms financially. You know, it's the third consecutive season without Champions League football. And it's roughly between 15 and 30 million you can get there if you're, you know, by virtue of reaching the group stage, not just in terms of the qualification money, but from ticket revenue and TV cash and stuff as well. So we'll get on to what that means in terms of the transfer window for Celtic a bit later, I imagine. But yeah, it's that, and you know, there's been some off-note performances so far in the league. But the second half of Motherwell, I mean, could be reflected on in a couple of months down the line as a small turning point. But then obviously that, you know, they're only as good as your next game. So we'll see how things go from Ross County and onwards. But yeah, mixed bag so far.
What have you made of the kind of, you wrote a piece in The Athletic recently talking about the baffling team selections, information that Lennon's putting out. What do you think is going wrong at the moment?
I think the main issue is that the Celtic have four strikers, three of them aren't match fit, and the fourth one clearly isn't rated enough to be a first team striker, even when there's literally no one else.
To
specify, but that's probably good for radio. Patrick Klimala, from what I was told when he arrived, like, people in Poland were baffled that Celtic had signed him because they didn't rate him very highly, and he didn't impress in training. But when first team training resumed in June after football was initially suspended, he'd bulked up, he'd added a bit of, you know, he had retained his pace, and he was even finishing chances in training that he wasn't back when he first signed. You know, he's got a couple of goals in pre-season, including a brace and Hibs in the final bounce game, got a really well-taken goal against Hamilton, and it still didn't feel that, like, he can be the focal point you need in a one up top. You know, tactically, his biggest weaknesses are still his hold-up play and his link-up play, and I think you're doing, you know, in stark contrast to Odson Edward, who's so clever in that way, he really struggles. But I think what was very apparent in the second half of the Motherwell game is because he's just a natural striker, because his movement is very natural. The runs he makes behind Motherwell's defence stretches them, and he also gives a target for all the previously aimless crosses they had against Ferencváros. There was actually a target in the box for them to aim for. And because he was making these runs, he was stretching the defence, you know, it really helped just give a greater balance, a greater equilibrium to Celtic's build-up play. You know, there was a greater confidence about, you know, who was making these runs when, who was pressing when, who was occupying these spaces. It just had a better tactical cohesion to the team, I guess.
So what's been the reaction then among Celtic fans to their Brexit, shall we say? But it's not a full Brexit. It's just a half Brexit because they're going to Europa League. Because this is the
Brexit?
Thing. I don't know. I thought it would be...
It should be Trexit.
Trexit, yeah. But look, the thing is, it's this baffling idea of not... Well, Neil Lennon put Ryan Christie up front, didn't he? And we saw against Motherwell, Christie far prefers being out wide and putting crosses in, and that was why you were seeing so many gaps in the centre-forward area. So what is there a baffling... Are Celtic fans baffled by Lennon's decision-making at the moment?
Yeah, they are. is the simple answer. To try and clarify a bit, I think the striker solution is unideal, but you know, that begs bigger questions, and maybe about the recruitment, about what's happening in training, if these guys are constantly not fit, they're not available for the first team. You know, with Turnbull arriving, that's 35 million Celtic have spent over the past 14 months, which is an extraordinary amount of money for a Scottish team to spend in that window of time. And they, you know, with that amount of money, they still didn't have a fit first team striker, or that they rated on Sunday. I think there's a degree of patience being lost with Lennon, because for all, you know, there's so much hype around this being the potential 10 in a row season. European football is massive, both in terms of what it means, I guess, from a reputational perspective for Celtic fans, but also what it means in terms of player retention. If we're going into like the transfer window, the club was clear with agents and with scouts that it was all about player retention. It was about keeping their key players for the 10 in a row season. But there was probably about a 50-50 chance of being able to keep players like Edward, Iron and Cham before Champions League elimination. It was possible, if not probable, that one of those guys would have gone beforehand. Now, afterwards, obviously with the financial situation and also with players a bit more unsettled, then you're probably looking at two, maybe even three. So it's got the transfer window very quickly evolved from keeping key players to possibly a really high player turnover at this point.
You know, you were talking about player retention. Lennon made a comment after the Ferencvaros game that, you know, if some of you don't want to be here, leave. So it does seem like one of those three might be gone, especially when you mention the amount of money Celtic have spent. They would want to recoup some of that, but Edouard seems like the most value to get off the books at the moment, but that wouldn't be the wisest decision, would it?
No. Yeah, as like a runaway Celtic's best player and also their, you know, the prime attacking asset. I feel, from what I understand, Edouard isn't one of the guys who explicitly wants to leave this window. I think it's very contingent on various other factors. Champions League was very important to him, but I don't think it was the deciding factor necessarily. The two players that Lennon was alluding to, I think, were Ncham and Ayer. Just from what I have inferred from speaking to people who were in the club and some agents, etc. Which is, it's kind of strange, because I do think Ncham and Ayer have been two of Celtic's better performers in recent games. I don't think they were directly culpable for their elimination on Wednesday. Yeah, I'd say they're probably the two most likely to leave this window. And you see, there's some like decent fees for them. I'd be, if they were both to go, it seems to suggest that Celtic maybe wouldn't get 30 plus million for the two of them combined, which would be, you know, a pretty good going considering they cost less than 5 million, a pair of them before. So it's a 25 million profit. It's not too bad off a couple of years' investment in them. Yeah, I think keeping Edward is going to be the biggest talking point for Celtic for the next 5 weeks. Yeah, it's going to be in all the papers. It's going to be in all the, you know, the news now, all the news aggregation sites, all social media. It's just going to be linked. He's going to be linked with every Premier League club. As yeah, people are going to be bored of Edouard to X team by the end of this. They're going to be absolutely sick of it. But, you know, as from a Celtic fan perspective, as long as he's still in Glasgow, then they don't care.
Kieran Devlin of The Athletic there. Motherwell then rooted to the bottom of the table, but one team in that second half of the table had a stunning win and a stunning goal.
Kabamba. Again, willing runner. Substitute, Mitch Pinnock. Pinnock will play it out wide onto Kilty. Kilty's got a man in the box, two behind him, and it's a beautiful finish. Rory McKenzie, the substitute. That was gallus.
Good performances, but no results had been Kelly's season until Saturday, when they thumped Dundee United 4-0 and ended their 10-match winless run.
Did not see this coming.
Well, I did tip this game to be full of goals, because I think Kilmarnock and Dundee United in previous meetings before Dundee United were relegated had like something like 15 goals out of their last three meetings. But nevertheless, there's only one place to start, JJ. Rory McKenzie, what a goal.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? I think they talked about it on a sports scene, being it like a Lionel Messi kind of
They talked about it Saturday and Sunday night heavily.
The thing is, you can't try that shot unless you're already 3-0 up.
Yeah, you're right.
Do you know what I mean?
You probably receive it and then look for another pass. You wouldn't even attempt it outside the box.
Because you're just like, yeah, 3-0 up, I might as well have a go. You know when it's so if you're standing outside the box and the ball drops to you, no matter where you play, it's the law that you have to volley it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. This McKenzie, it was sat so perfectly for him to hit it like that. So I guess he had to take it on, but I think if it hadn't been 3-0, if it was 1-1 or something, I don't know if he would have done it.
The thing is, though, in this game, Dundee United had a lot of the ball. It wasn't that Kilmarnock were all over Dundee United. It was kind of the other way around.
That's how Killie want to play, though. I mean, that's how they set up. And I think, I really think it was mistakes that Dundee United made. I think Killie played well, and they did exactly what Dyer wanted them to do. That sounds like that Simpsons bit, don't do what Donnie does. Do you know the bit?
I don't remember.
Don't do what Donnie don't does. But yeah, Dyer would have set them up to play like this, so they don't need the ball. You control the game without the ball. It's very Jose Mourinho, kind of talking about him again. He's on my brain after watching that documentary earlier. and the mistakes, I mean, the Connolly mistake, where he gets tackled by Kibamba and he runs through, just shouldn't have done it. He should have been quicker with the first touch. And there's a couple of... there's a really good point that Neil McCann put on Sports Scene talking about how Reynolds loses track of his man for a half second before Kibamba gets the header for the first. Mm-hmm. But you see there's this little tiny mistakes, and the way Killie are set up is to take advantage of those. But they don't get those mistakes. The games are very low scoring, but when they happen, that's what you get.
It's ruthlessness as well, though. But just like you say, Kilmarnock were obviously happy for Dundee United to have the ball. Mm-hmm. But that only comes with confidence when you've got two strikers up front, which Alex Dyer said he hadn't went for two strikers until this game. So Kibamba and Eamon Brophy up front. And it just seemed to kind of prove that when they were in that final third, it looked like they were going to score. And so they scored four. But Dundee United don't have that. You know, Lauren Shankland's been out. Nicky Clark has been scoring their goals, but I know one's been from the penalty spot. They just don't have that ruthlessness at the moment, albeit they seem to be putting in good performances and showing a lot of work rate. You have to be getting into that final third and being dangerous.
But then
Kilmarnock, I think, had 9 shots on target from 15. Yeah. So, but Dundee United with 66% of the possession. It's just not good enough when you've got the possession and you can't turn it into goals.
No, I don't think it reads like that at all, man. Because I think it's like this, right? So it's very rare you're playing as two strikers anyway, especially with a back four. And Dundee United has switched between a 3 and a 4 this season. So they played a 4 in this game. So straight away, your two centre-backs are busy. And then that means Butcher's got to come back and help him out. But when you have the ball, you have to make the pitch wide and you depth and width. So you make the pitch wide, you spread open, and that makes you vulnerable to counterattacks. It also makes you vulnerable to any mistake. So like Connolly's the only man there, no one near him, no one to make a recovery run and help him out. So that's the kind of thing that happens with this. And then sure enough, it's like ruthless finishing, but it's not like they're creating, like Kibamba just steals the ball from him and scores. Sure. It's not like they created the chance, right? The cross from wide, I think Greg Kilty had a good game as well in this. He did really well. But like once they made mistakes and they went behind, so the goal that Kibamba scored, great header, like it's like an Alan Shearer-style header. I can't remember the second goal. What was that one? It was Brophy. It was Brophy, like a really tidy finish across the way, right? So then, if you want to get back in the game, you've got to then push forward even more, try and get in. So at 3-0, you've got to push and open up, and then that's the mistake with Connolly. And then, of course, you've got McKenzie chipping him from 30 yards, which you can't really account for. Like, no one's done anything wrong there. So it's just kind of a bit of circumstance. Like, when you play a 4-4-2, the strikers are there, sure enough, so you can hit one long and they can knock it off to there. But they're actually mainly there for your defensive play. So you can, like, those two block the middle of the pitch to show the ball wide so you can then control where the ball goes that way. So I think that just played into how Dundee United were trying to play, but they just couldn't get through it. I think if you played that game again another 2 times, which they'll do, the score will be different both times.
Interesting. Well, it's a result that leaves Kilmarnock and Dundee United next to each other on the table. But towards the top, Hibs lost their unbeaten record against Aberdeen, and we're going to chat about that next.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it totally ad-free via The Athletic.
A Lewis Ferguson penalty, the difference between Aberdeen and Hibs on Sunday evening, and moves the Dons up to 4th in the table. Slightly comical penalty given away by Martin Boyle. I don't know. He just loves the ball. He just loves to keep it at his feet. But then when it comes to clearances, he should really avoid players.
Yeah, you kicked the wrong thing.
Another Lewis Ferguson penalty and another win for Aberdeen. JJ, you must be a happy, happy lad.
I told you, you put 1-0 Aberdeen to win every week and you're and you're in the money, baby. Although, yeah.
I think all their wins have been 1-0, wasn't it? Or there was a 2-1 Livingston.
In the history of Derek McInnes, yes, they have been all 1-0. I also think this is the best I've seen Aberdeen play in months.
Interesting.
And actually, if we take away the whole coronavirus thing, you know about that, in like even longer, like a year or so, it's just everything looked so much better. And I think one
Why
of the key
was
reasons,
that then?
Well, Ash Taylor was nowhere near the team for a start, so he couldn't shell the ball 80 yards every time he got it. But the real key, and I think you'll, if you watched the game, did you, the Hibs game?
Yeah, I watched the game, yeah.
Ross McCrory, who I always want to call Rory McCrory. I don't know why. It was funny.
It's a real mistake from the parents.
Man, Rory McCrory and Lewis Ferguson in that midfield, that is like a Premier League in future level midfield. Lewis Ferguson's going to be a great player, already is. Mm. And they've got the right attitude, the right mentality. Rory McCrory is also clearly a level above everyone that team, and it makes everyone better. Look how good Ryan Hedges looks all of a sudden. Scott Wright looks decent, and Lincoln so well.
It's funny because Derek McInnes' post-match, when he talked about Rory McCrory. Oh, this is going to
Sorry,
last.
Ross.
This is definitely
Sorry,
going to last. He's obviously buzzing to have him involved. He said he's been following him for years. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, for any player, when you have a manager that's so enthusiastic about you, it clearly showed in the pitch because he was everywhere, just niggling Hibs midfielders, starting plays,
his positioning, his timing of runs, like everything. Yeah, man, I totally agree. Like, he's always in the right place at the right time. He's playing in like a holding midfield role, but he was even like when there was a gap to where the pressure just started higher up, he would run to make it, which is what clever players do. Because sure enough, you can teach them that on the training ground, but you just need a player to step in and do it. Also, the ball is going short to midfield. You don't always have to do that, but it's so important to keep the ball doing that. And then you
It wasn't perfect though, JJ. Because you know, if we talk about Hibs, it's their first defeat of the season. Hibs fan Ross Quinn wrote in basically saying, "I, as a Hibs fan, saw this defeat coming. We've not been perfect, but winning games, and in this one, we seem to have a bit more of the game, but still lost. Do you think that Europe is too much to achieve?" Europe aside, I think it's a good hallmark to have when you're not playing well and winning games. But Hibs had their chances in this game as well. But it was kind of a lot of credit to Aberdeen that they nullified a lot of those chances and didn't make it easy for
Hibs. Yeah, what chances did they really have, though? I mean, there was the one where Lewis didn't catch the cross. And
there
then
there was that one. And
but that's
then
not really
Martin
a chance.
Boyle again.
Boyle had a shot, yeah. I mean, like, Hibs is a good players, and like I said, I really rate Hibs, and I think Jack Ross is going to be a good manager for them, and I think they'll finish. I think they'll be pushing for fourth and third.
Yeah,
I think, honestly, just adding Rory McCrory to the Aberdeen team makes them just a little bit better, and you can see why Hibs are so desperate to get him in. But, and missing Gogic was massive in that game for them because they didn't have that. Like, they want Hallberg to try and do the defensive stuff, maybe Newell trying to do it as well. Scott Allen came in because Ross maybe thought that he'd be able to make a difference, but Aberdeen's kept them dead. They couldn't get on the ball. And I think Hibs want to play in the counter, but Aberdeen won't let them do that. And then you saw, like, it's really hard for Hibs to defend against. You had Hedges, Wright, Watkins, Hayes even, and Kennedy just all swapping positions constantly. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to work out where they're coming from.
You brought up a good point about Alex Gogic because he tested positive for coronavirus through the SFA kind of set up, and then they then had to do a private test via the NHS, which then came back twice negative. So Jack Ross has kind of been very critical of the SFA protocol because
he should have been able to play,
said
right?
at 10:30 p.m. Friday night he still hadn't had guidance from the SFA that whether or not they could train on a Saturday. So Hibs themselves made the decision that there would be no training on the Saturday. So they miss a day of training. They have a player who is negative, but they cannot play him. So it throws your whole game plan out the window 24 hours before the game is supposed to play. So I have some sympathy, but still, I don't think you can ever pin any game on missing one player.
I don't know. I think you can absolutely Messi at Barcelona, but you, like Gogic is not that good. I do like him, but it just changes the way your team's set up. If you don't have that defensive balance, it changes how the attacks work. It changes where you can. I mean, the standouts for Hibs in that game, I thought, like, Josh Doig is already some player, and I think
flagged him earlier on the season. Excited about him. But anyway, we'll see if the break does Hibs any good. But it's time for another 1-0.
Serrano looking for a bit of quality into the middle. He gets it, and he gets the header from John Guthrie. And the big defender with a telling contribution.
Livingston 1, Ross County 0. It's a result that angered Ross County manager Stuart Kettlewell. It was John Guthrie with the winner. But JJ, should it have been allowed to stand? Because Kettlewell claimed that Ross Stewart is actually being fouled in the fact that Guthrie claimed to meet the header. But Ross Stewart was involved in a similar action. He was deemed to have been fouling the play.
Yeah, and he said that was a foul and the other one wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your thoughts?
Well, it's the tombola of Scottish refereeing where you can put the same action in and get a different result every time. But I do think they're actually
SFA bingo.
Yeah, they are slightly different, and I agree with, I think it was Neil McCann's take on it on Sportsing Saturday when he says that the first one, Stewart's got his hands holding down the Livingston player so he cannot jump, which is why that's a foul. And the second one, when you're in amongst that box, like you are touch tight to people, especially if you're doing a man mark system, you have to be, so you're there. But when you jump, then you take your hands off so they can still get up to jump at it. I think it's okay. I think it stands.
Yeah, I tend to agree. What was it? The second that where the goal came from, Guthrie was actually kind of sandwiched in between two Ross County players. So it's one of those where they're two completely different incidents. As much as hands were on the shoulders, I guess it's how you interpret it. But
it's so minute. I mean, if it's against my team, it should not be allowed. And if it happens for my team, then it should 100% be allowed.
Yeah, but look, Ross County also had Carl Tremarco sent off.
Your fantasy football star.
Oh, he's not in my team anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not in my team anymore because he wasn't really starting. And I'm glad he's not in there anymore. Still.
Yes.
Pretty harsh for the first one because the goalkeeper sold him under the river. He tried to get him out. I can't remember who he fouled, but the second one's just unfortunate as well. I think Tremarco's really unlucky to be getting sent off because the second one, he just gets beat. By pace from Devlin, I think it
that's
is.
Right. Yeah, they'll shoot him to the line, and he just can't take him. Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, I don't think he means to like take him out. It's just the pace that Devlin's going at, and Tremarco just gets across him, clips him a little bit, but that wasn't deliberate. It's a yellow card, and it's just unfortunate.
Yeah.
We also saw Lars Lokos from Livingston coming in. This was a lad that they were hoping to replace Lyndon Dykes. But I think we only saw one flash of him in this game. Do you see that? I think it was a header that was kind of clean but straight at the goalkeeper. I think we've yet to see how good he's actually going to be.
Oh yeah, no idea.
From,
yeah,
like the third division.
Yeah, there's a bit of stuff in him in Y Scout, and he's just a striker. So we'll see. But his name does sound cool AF when they shout it out. Lacoste. That sounded great.
And it's alliterated, Lars Lacoste.
Yeah, that's the kind of name that you'd have. Of the handsome foreign player who comes in to a sitcom football team, who you hate at first, but
God
then you...
damn it, Lars! Oh my...
A very camp sitcom, and then and he learned a bit later on. You learn that he just has some stuff in his backstory that means he had to be mean to you. So then they become friends. Anyway, let's go into the next game.
It's not quite Rory McCrory. We'll get a sitcom, Rory and Lars.
Lars the coach.
But enough of that. Two matches to go, and we're going to the top of the table, Rangers.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Davis's ball, it's off the bar, but in from Hadji. Rangers in front.
Yeah, once again, Steven Gerrard came out attacking his side's lack of ruthlessness in front of goal, but Rangers were still able to claim 3 points thanks to the two goals that they got in 5 minutes from Hadji and Tavernier. Solid enough win for Rangers, but do you share the same kind of concern? Because at the end of the day, they still scored two goals, and okay, the amount of chances they had, Gerrard should be expecting more, but they won 2-0.
No,
it's all right, isn't it?
I could completely agree with Gerrard that that is exactly the reason that we said at the start of the season why we think Rangers might not close the gap to Celtic, because they're not like killing teams off. Mm. It's really important that they do this. And there's things like, there's like a header that Roof hit that he should just, you have to put that on target. At least it has to go on target to score.
Flew over the bar, didn't it? It was really
yeah, I mean, I'm sure enough you missed these, but I get the feeling that if it was 0-0 or the last few minutes and 1-1 or something like that, right, that's when maybe they'd step up and score those. But you have to play at that level the whole time if you're going to win stuff, which is what Rangers are trying to do. So I can, like, Gerrard is trying to like batter into them, because if they don't play with that kind of mentality, they'll end up, it's like they'll miss a couple of chances, and then, like, see, they score two, right? And all it would have taken is something daft to happen, Hamilton score, and then Hamilton get a random corner, and that's them in, like, 2-2. Like, you can't rest on it. And the amount of chances they're getting, that Ryan Kent is brilliant again, just doing everything, pulling it apart. But the boys, just right at the top end, could really do with the... It's not even, like, need to practice, it's just being ruthless, right?
Sure, but you still have so many overloading players. Like you mentioned Ryan Kent. I love the idea that when you have these wide players coming in, the fullbacks seem to cut in. So you got a goal from Tavernier. But even in the build-up to that, to the first goal for Hadji, you had Barisic getting into the box as well. There's a real determination to flood the box with players to try and get goal-scoring opportunities. Rangers are so attacking, but... I see what you're saying. They should be killing teams off. 24 shots, I think they had.
Yeah, they've got great players and they're making chances. It's just that, like, I don't know how you coach this into someone. You just can't have someone who's like, they're determined to win. They're obviously like really talented players, and they saw Hamilton pretty easily. But that should have been 4 or 5-0.
Sure, but it's like, another clean sheet, 6 in a row. It's a record of clean sheets from a time that Celtic made in like 1906 or something like that. But I mean, still impressive nonetheless. 6 clean sheets in a row. And I think Hellander coming back is a real bonus. They've obviously got Leon Balogun just sitting there ready to come in if required.
I wonder if he'll come back in. I like Balogun a lot. Like, he got injured, obviously. I want to see whether he'd come back straight in when he's ready. Because Hellander's done really well.
Hellander's a very, very, very good player. I really like him a lot, especially next to Connor Goldson. Rangers are looking really good, at probably better in defence, and they're getting the goals just enough time. But let's talk about Hamilton. Brian Rice bringing in Regan Mimnaw and Andrew Winter. Are these players really getting it up to the speed? I know Mimnaw got an assist last week. Is it still a waiting game for Hamilton? You just have to pick their moment to pick up some points.
They're going to finish 10th. How many more times have I got to say it? Also, I agree with Brian Rice. He says after this game, like, they did well. Their heads didn't drop. They didn't capitulate when they went 2-0 down. They kept in it because it was a short space of time. Like, when the first one went in, he went, oh, here we go, right? Mm. But they kept in it. Young team, I think, like, even the captain's 24, the boy McCann, who he's had a decent season so far as well, actually. McMahon, sorry, not McCann. I think that, I mean, they just know they're going to finish 10th. We talk about the same thing every single week with Hamilton. Good young players need to get on it really soon so they're not going to fall away. Brian Rice is a great coach. They're not that bad a team in there. Like, Fulton seems to be quite decent in goals as well.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Definitely. Well, just one more match to go. St Johnston 1, St Mirren 0. St Johnston toppling St Mirren with Stevie May scoring the only goal of the game.
He's back!
He's back. Although
temporarily!
He shouldn't have scored, because Nathan Sheridan should have just stuck his foot out and just blocked the cross. It was actually right there for him and he just leaves it. But Jim Goodwin came out after this match saying that there are 8 teams in the Premiership that can beat each other on any given day, but does that make for an exciting race for the top 6, in your opinion?
Yes.
Who's absolutely your picks for getting there, then?
Well, I think it seems pretty clear that it's going to be Celtic, Rangers, Aberdeen, Hibs in the top 4, in whatever order you want. Motherwell could pull into it, so they're probably going to come back eventually, because there's too many good players there to not. And then it's just a stramash of everyone else. Like, Ross County looked decent in the day. Dundee United are much better than losing 4-0. Kilmarnock look okay in that game again. They might be okay. Livingston are decent. It's everyone's pretty much the same. Yeah, and all the games are 1-0 and 2-1s, right? So.
Yeah, it's all over the shop at the moment.
Although, weirdly, I didn't think St. Johnstone would win this either. But then I think I'm overrating St. Mirren. I think I've made a mistake here.
Yeah, I don't know what I can say about this game, to be honest. I only saw the highlights. And by all reports, St. Johnstone were by far the better team. Even Jim Goodwin said so himself. Yeah. But I am interested to see how Callum Davidson progresses this St. Johnstone team, because obviously the job that he has, taking over a side that Tommy Wright has had for so long, obviously Davidson was under Tommy Wright himself a wee while ago, and now he's in the top job himself. How is he going to make this team any better? And he needed this win. I think Davidson really, really needed it, because it wasn't a great start, but there were still positive things in their style of play. I think there was, what is his name, Callum Hendry, needs to be a bit more clinical in front
better.
Of goal. Much, yeah, just better. But I really like the look of McNamara, the fullback they've brought in from Millwall. Looks like he's a decent player and could get better, especially providing crosses into the box. So there are quite a few good shoots of promise for St Johnstone, but St Mirren will be disappointed. I was actually surprised that Goodwin just kind of took this result as a kind of like, we just weren't at the races sort of thing. I would expect him to be a bit more aggressive in his language.
I'm sure he was with his players, but when you talk to the press, you just want to get through it, just move on to the next one, not get too rattled by it, not make it a big deal of it, just reset, take in what's happened and go to the next bit. And like, in terms of St Johnstone progressing as well, I mean, they finished last season on the points per game thing, they finished sixth apparently.
Yeah.
So an improvement would be above that, which would be really hard. So
yeah,
I think maybe
harsh,
just
actually, yeah.
Yeah. Just maintaining
it'd be harsh it. To expect any higher than that.
Yes.
But anyway, we shall wait and see. That's the weekend done actually. So we're going to the international break next. And we're going to chat Steve Clark, because he's a very good manager. Talk about his Scotland squad. Let's see if they're going to be a very good team. So we're going to speak to Tartan Army's biggest fan next.
This is the Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Listen to it totally ad-free via The Athletic.
Laura Brannan's back, because we can't talk about Scotland international football without you. Hello, Laura.
Hello, how are you?
All good. Straight off the bat, Steve Clark, very good manager. Are you happy with the team he's picked?
Yes, I think I'm actually quite happy with it. There's not really too many surprises, is there?
Not really, no. I mean, we're kind of unsure how he's going to set up, but probably we'll have all the midfielders. No defence.
Just shove them all in.
Yeah, exactly. Is there anyone that you think could have squeezed into the squad? Or
I mean, I'm going
don't
to be
just
slightly,
pick a Motherwell player.
That's the thing. I was going to be slightly biased, because obviously I see them play week in, week out. I kind of would have liked to see Alan Campbell get given a chance, because he's kind of on that brink now of getting too old for the under-21s. When's his chance really going to come to get into the first team? Especially with the under-21s only having one competitive game coming up. So I thought, well, he could at least join the first team training and then go away for the under-21 game next week after the Israel game. So it's a wee bit disappointing to not see him involved in that sense. Does it count if I say David Turnbull as well, now that he's not a Motherwell player?
So, of course it counts.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, same kind of reason. I think it's kind of a good time to get him involved as well. But to be honest, largely across the board, I did see that Ryan Fraser wasn't included. I'm not sure why, what the reason was for that. I assume it's a good reason. So,
he hasn't played football for so long, has he? He's been
that's disappointing
out of the game for ages,
because
yeah.
If I was picking my 11, then he'd probably be in my starting 11. So that was a wee bit annoying. But no, apart from that, Shankland kind of raised a few eyebrows, I think, because he hasn't kicked a ball for so long, which kind of made me think. I heard Steve Clark saying that, well, if Shankland declares himself fit, I've got full trust in him that he'll be able to do a job for us. But then in the next question, he said, I don't want Stephen Naismith in my squad because he's not played football for so long. So I kind of see them as similar players at this stage. Neither of them have really played since before lockdown. So it was a wee bit odd. I wasn't surprised in the slightest to see him pulling out, obviously, through injury.
I guess that could be that Shankland's kind of young. Well, he's much younger than Naismith. And so you get the experience for the future, whereas Naismith is older and likely to take longer to recover from injury. Or
but that's the same. That's the same for Turnbull. Is he too young to even be in the setup?
But there's so many midfielders that are good, like, ahead of them just now. That's the thing. Like, I agree with Laura and those two players. I like to see them as well. But then you can't then take out McGregor or McGinn or McLean.
No, but I'm not necessarily
saying
that these players should start. I don't expect them to play. But it would be nice to give them the experience to meet the boys, to kind of get to know them, to kind of get used to the environment and stuff. And yeah.
See what level they should be at.
I don't think age is really ever an argument. I think if you're good enough, then you're old enough. And Turnbull is definitely
age is but
good
a
enough.
Number. But look, we've got Israel first, then we've got the Czech Republic. What is your hope? Are you quite confident about getting results in these games?
I mean, confident, yeah. I'm just a bit kind of, I'm not too excited about these fixtures just now. I think it's maybe something to do with the fact that there's going to be no fans at the games. Yeah.
Because you can't go, isn't it? That's why.
And that's the thing, like, football is nothing without fans. And I see the argument, like, I get we have
does
to
Does that make you more nervous then? Does that make you more nervous? Do you think Scotland will play better with fans or without them?
No, I don't think so. I think just now almost my mentality is just the Nations League, which is not really what my psyche is. My psyche is very much we have to win every game, even if it's a friendly. But I'm just, look, it'll be different when kickoff happens. But right now, even the playoff, I'm just a bit, I just don't want these games to be getting played right now. I just wish we could hold off until like the March international break and stuff to play, more so the playoff, to be honest, than the Nations League. But so I'm a wee bit kind of more relaxed than normal towards games. But as you're saying, I mean, we've got three games against Israel coming up, and we've played them twice recently as well. So I don't think we should be afraid of them, and I think we should kind of be very well averse to how they're going to be lining up and performing against us.
We had Grant Jendo got in touch with us, shown real confidence in Steve Clarke's very good management, because he's a very good manager. He says, why shouldn't we be European champions?
I mean,
like I was saying, we shouldn't. Why shouldn't we? So, I mean, the reason is because everyone will be drunk for a year.
I think we also kind of need to qualify first.
Yeah.
Can we also maybe remember we've not actually got there yet? But, I mean, once we're there, I'm in it to win it. But let's get through the playoffs first.
Well, remember, Greece were 80-1 to win the Euros in 2004. Scotland are 500-1. So there you go.
Oh, it's worth a pound, come on.
So if we just talk about the team selection again, what's your preferred lineup? Who do you want to start up front? Should we be looking at Lyndon Dykes, or should he just be in the squad? And the thing is, I see him playing, because if he doesn't play, then he's still eligible to play for Australia.
Yeah,
so if we get him on the pitch, then he's ours forever.
I mean, I didn't personally put him into my starting 11. Although, to be honest, I'm kind of, as I was saying about Fraser there, I'm kind of missing a player, to be honest. I've got 10 in my team right now. So if you want to help me out here, fill my spot.
I'm
obviously Marshall and goal. My back four, I'm doing a 4-2-3-1. My back four is Tierney at right back, but flexible on whether that then changes to Stephen O'Donnell, and we put Kieran Tierney in instead of Cooper in centre half. So I'm a wee bit flexible on that one. I mean, I'm going to be biased, I'm going to put Declan Gallagher in regardless.
Is any of this based on any knowledge of the opposition?
Not in the slightest. This is purely on my Scotland team if I was Scotland manager. And nobody wants me as Scotland manager, so it's not going to be a team that wins.
I don't know about that. JJ, what do you have to say to that?
I don't know. I just don't think we've got very good players. I was thinking, before we don't, please let's not go into a Robertson and Tierney thing, but I really think Robertson could play on the left of any of these things and double up as a fifth defender when they come back. So Tierney can play left back. I don't think you should mess around with people out of position.
But you also want
right
to play
back,
systems that people
like you need to have someone.
People know.
Yeah, but that's easy. Just, I mean, I think like a 4-5-1, 4-2-3-1 is probably what we should play. I think probably the right way. I mean, Clark could probably get us to sing and dance to a 4-4-2, really compact. But the problem we've got with that is obviously they don't have any strikers. So no.
Well, I mean, I'm skipping ahead, but I've actually put Christie up front in my team.
Well, you could play him alongside a taller man, a big and little kind of thing, I guess, might work. But I like him as a false
thing.
Yeah, I like Christie a lot.
From what I've seen of Christie in the last two games, the one against Ferencváros, which they lost, and then against Motherwell, he didn't seem to lead the line as such. he does go out wide, and he, I think he put in the most amount of crosses.
But he wouldn't need to if he's got a...
And that's not what you want from a centre-forward. So I don't think he's... Although I'm kind of with you. I agree with you.
You can play him next to someone else.
He can play that position, but he needs to learn that position before he can actually, you know, be comfortable and competent.
Yeah, I mean, we're also kind of lucky in the sense we've got the likes of Forrest and McGregor as well, who can all sort of switch around in terms of that kind of middle, that front three, who's pushing off in terms of further forward. So I'd be kind of comfortable with any of them really in an attacking sense. But as I've seen, it was Fraser was obviously my other player in the three. So I've got a gap there. And behind them, I would play probably McGinn and McTominay.
What about this thing we mentioned last week? The idea of, you know, the Premier League players that haven't played any football for a very long time compared to some of the Scottish players that have been playing competitive football for, 6 weeks now. Could we see Clark playing more Scottish Premiership players than players that are playing down in England? So I'm saying, you know, omitting the likes of McLean, McTominay, McGinn, for instance, and having the likes of more Christie, Forrest, Ryan Jack involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Cause like, even when I was kind of looking at my team, I was thinking, oh, McTominay, Jack, who will I go for there? And that might get someone like Jack the kind of advantage in that sense. There's guys like Andy Robertson is always going to play regardless. I would probably say the same for John McGinn though, to be fair. And considering this is a team that we're hoping to shape to play in the playoff in a month's time, I wouldn't want to see it too different. But then there's also that kind of fear of, you know, if we get thrashed next week, the confidence going into the playoff will be so low if you've played that what looks like a first team. There's also vice versa as well. If we go and beat them, everyone might get a wee bit complacent ahead of the playoff and go, well, we won there, so it's a dead cert for next month, which is never the case.
And I don't know what these next two games really mean in regards to the Nations League. You know, how important are these two games in our group? Do we know?
So this is part of the Nations League, which if you think... we think
how much do I have to care?
We are in the playoffs just now for the Euros because of the Nations League. So it's a similar path in that sense. It's glorified friendlies with an incentive at the end of it to then qualify for the World Cup, which would be in 2022. I can't do my maths that quickly. The Qatar World Cup. So it gives us another leg, really. And it's always good for Scotland to have an alternative chance to qualify for something if we don't succeed in the first attempt.
And this is it, because we got promoted, right? We were in...
I agree, except that I don't think there'll still be a world in 2022.
Let's hope. Maybe not in Qatar. Anyway, thanks, Laura. Fingers crossed
much.
You do end up enjoying these games.
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I'll be on next week arguing about everything that's happened in both of the matches.
Oh, well, I'll see you then.
Thanks, guys.
Time for the odds with Paddy Power and producer Abby. Abby, we've just been talking about Scotland's chances in the Nations League, so tell us what the bookies at Paddy Power say.
Well, they are the favourites, Scotland against Israel. That's the first match on Friday. Scotland are 8-11 to win this one, Israel 7-2. As for the match on Monday against the Czech Republic, it's not in their favour. They are 7-2 to win that one, Scotland, but Czech Republic odds on 6-4.
Well, we've been talking about the top six, and there being eight teams who on any given day seem capable of beating each other. So who's joining Celtic and Rangers in the top six?
So as JJ said, it's Aberdeen and Hibs are the favourites at 1-16 and 1-12 to be in there. Then it is St Johnstone who are the next favourites, which must be representative of their form from last year. They're 11-8 to be in the top six. And perhaps a big surprise here, Dundee United are the sixth favourites to be in that top half of the table, 6-4. Motherwell, who of course finished third last year, they're only 7-4. And Livingston, 2-1, who also finished in the top six last season.
Dundee United, you must be taking the mickey. Well, I'm sure that'll change throughout the season. Thanks, Abby. And remember, please gamble responsibly. It's over 18s only, and when the fun stops, stop. Before we end, we're going to finish off with a little FFS. But obviously, there's not going to be any fantasy football for a wee bit, with it being international break. It may well be worth looking at your team and deciding who the big players are going to be in the next coming weeks. So, JJ, have you got anyone that you've got an eye on that you're going to bring in? Because if I look at myself, I'm in a horrific state right now. I've just been knocked off top spot in our little individual league. Yeah. I've still got Nisbet injured, Edward injured, and Tremarco has been sent off in my team. I can't believe, I thought I got rid of him. but this is why you should pay attention. Don't have kids, folks. It really takes your mind off things. Anyone you're going to be bringing in?
I mean, the only ones that are new that you could have in is Jamie Murphy of Wales has joined Hibs from Rangers. And in case anyone doesn't know what that joke is, Sky Sports put his name up to come on as a sub for Hibs with a Welsh flag next to his name. Obviously, he's not Welsh. And also, Yusuf Malumbu is back.
Yeah, that again. That high scoring attacking midfielder, Yusuf Malumbu.
Exactly. I'm not sure. Like, Aberdeen 1-0 to win every single week is a good bet. So you could put Ferguson in, now he's on the penalties. I'm not sure what's going on with injuries to Edward and Celtic striker situation, and they don't seem to be playing very well, but you don't want to get rid of all your Celtic players, so you only make one transfer at a time. And Ryan Kent's looking good, but Rangers keep not finishing their chances. So who do you put in?
I don't know. Jamie Murphy should be dropped in price quite a bit moving to Hibs, because I think he was in the 4.8s or something like that with a Rangers shirt on his back.
Yeah.
So that should drop. He could be an interesting one because I think he'll probably be a bit of a super sub for Hibs.
Might get transfers next 2 weeks, man.
I think a Yeti could be an interesting one to bring in if you're needing a striker, because I think he might be quite important for Celtic, and considering he scored 2 in his last 2 off the bench, he obviously gets into good positions, but that's a high transfer buy at 7 million.
Yeah.
So I need to do a lot. I need to get rid of 2 strikers. I think, don't know if I lose Nisbet or not, because I think Hibs are going to be quite reliant on him as well. But
I mean,
Jake,
I think
Hastie's getting out. Tremarco's going.
I think it's probably fair to say that we are not the best at this, but the Totally Scottish Football League, the public league we've got, the top of that is the Athletics fantasy football expert Mark McGettigan, at FPL General. So maybe we should try and get him on, because he might have some actual advice.
I think that'd be a good idea.
Because I don't know. I want Captain Constantine every week.
Captain Constantine. Well, at least he follows you now on Twitter, and that'll make you happy for the rest of the season. So that's it for this week's show. Thanks to Kieran and Laura for joining us. We'll be back next Wednesday following Scotland's 2 matches against Israel and the Czech Republic. Remember, you can get yourself an Athletic trial for 30 days by heading to theathletic.com/Scottish show. And remember, you can get that without ads if you do that. Until then, though, JJ, thank you for keeping me company. Thanks to the Little Kicks for their lovely little tune. And thanks to producer Abby as well. Thank you, most importantly, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta, and be sure to check out our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Muddy Knees Media.